This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we begin a special holiday weekend series of country music. Our first guests are the Dixie Chicks, the best-selling female group in history. As you probably know by now, much of their country music audience was furious with them 3 years ago when lead singer Natalie Maines made a disparaging comment about President Bush just before the invasion of Iraq. A lot of country stations stopped playing the Dixie Chicks records, and they had to protect themselves against death threats. In May, they released their first new CD since that uproar. It premiered at number one on the Billboard album chart, but no major radio format has embraced the new CD, and it dropped out of the top 20. Let's start with a track from their new CD, Taking the Long Way. This is the first single from the album, Not Ready to Make Nice.
Forgive. Sounds good. Forgive. I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price.
We're going to hear the interview I recorded in May with all three of the Dixie Chicks, lead singer Natalie Maines, banjo player Emily Robison, and fiddler Marty McGuire. The group formed in 1989, but it wasn't until 1995 that Maines joined. I asked them first about the big controversy. If you don't mind, I'm just going to read through, just so our listeners, listeners who haven't been following this will know all the quotes and questions. So forgive me, Natalie, as I play your part for a moment. The initial comment that you made was in March 2003, just before we invaded Iraq, and you said at a concert in London, just so you know, we're ashamed the President of the United States is from Texas. And then you made an apology of sorts later. You said, as a concerned American citizen, I apologize to President Bush because my remark was disrespectful. I feel that whoever holds that office should be treated with the utmost respect. And then more recently you said, I apologized for disrespecting the office of the president, but I don't feel that way anymore. I don't feel he's owed any respect whatsoever. So let's start with the initial comment. Was that, Natalie, was that something you had planned to say? Did you go to the concert saying, this is what I'm going to say, I'm going to use exactly these words, I thought it through very carefully, and this is exactly what I want to say about the president?
That'd be a little sad if that was the quote that I thought about thoroughly. No, it was it was supposed to be the eve of war. The next day was his supposed deadline. So in our minds, war was happening the next day, and nothing was planned. But just what I was thinking when I was on stage was just, it just didn't seem right to not acknowledge. But in my way, you know, I didn't want to get up there and make everyone sad. I sort of wanted to give my point of view, but still in an entertaining way, because we've never preached from stage or that sort of thing. But it was too important to ignore, and we are putting on a music show, so I wasn't going to get on a soapbox about it.
Emily, Marty, were you surprised when Natalie said that?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, because she always speaks off the cuff, you know, nothing's ever really planned. You know, you can always expect just about anything to come out of Natalie's mouth, but you know, I definitely, this is Emily speaking, I felt this heat enter my body from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes. And I just remember thinking, oh no, you know, this is going to cause, you know, someone's going to have a problem with this. I didn't have a problem with it. I agreed with her wholeheartedly, but, you know, it was one of those things where I just thought it might stir something up, never to the magnitude that it did. You know, I thought it might make the paper, and that was enough to kind of go, oh, you know, but nothing to where I felt like it was going to be an issue for the rest of our career.
There were several gatherings to destroy your CDs. What do you think was the most creative way of destroying it that people came up with?
I thought the tractor was pretty good. That got a lot of
a tractor
news time.
The tractor is very symbolic because it was country radio hosting some of these CD crushings, and they'd lay our CDs out on a blanket, and then they'd roll them, either have their listeners stomp on our CDs and crush them, or get a big tractor to destroy them.
How sweet to put a blanket down first.
You got royalties on all those destroyed CDs, though, right?
Sure, yeah, they had to go buy them.
But there were death threats, too. I mean, definitely no laughing matter. What kind of death threats did you get?
You know, there were things. There was a radio station in San Antonio where the DJ, or two DJs, said they ought to get a posse together and go teach Natalie a lesson. And they thought that I lived where Emily actually lives. And that was just, you know, it's hard to pick one thing because on a daily basis it got more unbelievable. But just the overall hatred was the worst part for me. But and then, yeah, there was a serious, very specific death threat that came and was taken care of.
Well, let's hear some more music. My guests are the Dixie Chicks, and their new CD is called Taking the Long Way. I want to play another track from your new CD, and this is called I Hope. And you first sang this, or at least the first time I heard it was when you sang it on a TV benefit for the victims of Hurricane Katrina, and this was shortly after the hurricane. Why don't we hear the song, then we'll talk about it a little bit. And here's the Dixie Chicks.
Sunday morning, I heard the preacher say, thou shalt not kill. I don't wanna hear nothing else about killing, and that is God's will.
That's the Dixie Chicks from their new CD, Taking the Long Way, and my guests are the Dixie Chicks. You know, your new CD is produced by Rick Rubin, who, among other things, produced Johnny Cash's last recordings. He produced Neil Diamond's recent comeback record. He's produced a lot of hip-hop and heavy metal. It's as if the album comes with this statement, this is not a country record. You know, this is something with Rick Rubin as producer taking it in a different direction. Did you want to make that statement with the record?
We just knew we wanted to evolve, and it was freeing to not have to think about a format. We didn't think about any format. And Rick was a great matchup for us because, you know, when we met him and we asked him, "Where, you know, how do you hear us, or what would you do with us?" We liked his answer of, you know, I have no idea what the sound is until you write the songs. And, you know, we went in not knowing at all what the sound was going to be like. But we loved Rick's confidence. I think at that time, maybe creatively, we were lacking some confidence. We've always felt like we were definite co-producers on our records. And, you know, we knew that we needed someone else who knew a lot of other things and different ways to do things and different writers and different musicians. And Rick had that confidence.
My guests are the Dixie Chicks. Their latest CD is called Taking the Long Way. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are the Dixie Chicks, lead singer Natalie Maines, banjo player Emily Robison, and fiddler Marty McGuire. Their latest CD is called Taking the Long Way. Emily, Marty, I know you both grew up playing bluegrass and going to bluegrass competitions. I think you both played fiddle when you were girls, you know, when you were young.
Actually, my mom started us on Suzuki violin. It was a rite of passage. When you turned five in our family, you had to start a Suzuki of one type or another. Our older sister took piano, and Marty and I played violin. And I guess as we got, our dad was a country music fan, so as we got older, Marty went to fiddle, and I don't think she wanted her little sister playing fiddle. So I went on in search of my own instrument, and the banjo called from across the bluegrass concert hall. And so, yeah, I mean, from a very early age, we were in lessons.
So did you have other friends who liked bluegrass music? Were you?
No.
No?
Absolutely not.
And, you know, we found friends through bluegrass once we kind of got into it. Marty was in a kids band. She started in a kids band called Blue Night Express. It was the youngest, Texas' youngest bluegrass band. And then I joined when I was 12. And
does that make you that kind of freaks? Like, here they are, ladies and gentlemen, the top bluegrass band, you know, the youngest bluegrass kids.
That was just our own moniker. We didn't know. I don't think
that's
anybody knew who we were.
That's just what the t-shirt said.
Yeah.
We don't know if that's true.
We were always in competition with the peewee pickers.
That's right.
What was it like to start off musically in a competitive way, going to competitions? Did that take any of the joy out of the music?
It wasn't really like that. We went to just perform at a lot of the festivals, and there would happen to be a banjo contest or a fiddle contest. And yes, I fought with my parents over whether I wanted to be in the fiddle contest. It was a lot of pressure, but it was more... You know, I really...
So who wanted what?
I didn't want to enter because, yeah, it was nerve-wracking. But my parents, you know, were really smart. They made it a family affair, and we were city girls growing up in Dallas and going to private school where my mother taught. And, yes, you know, no, we weren't getting exposed to anything like that where we were living. And they kind of sought it out and made it something really great the family could do together. We'd go camping and we'd hear other bands. And the more Emily and I were around other musicians that were either our age or older or just, you know, great pickers who kind of took us under their wing. So I think because we were going to see live music our whole lives long, we were constantly getting inspired. And therefore, we kept it up and we kept practicing and wanting to make it a career.
Natalie, your father, Lloyd Maines, is a very well-known, very well-respected pedal steel guitar player and also record producer. And he played with the Dixie Chicks before you did and was co-producing their records before you joined up with them. So before we get to how you... Well, why don't we get to it now? How did you end up... joining the Dixie Chicks after your father was already playing with them?
I don't know exactly. They have more perspective from what happened on their end, but I was in college and they called to see if I would sing a song that they wrote, and I said yes, and then I quickly got nervous that I wasn't going to like the song, and I'm not one to be able to fake my way through things. So I wound up loving the song. It was You Were Mine, and little did I know it was an audition, which I did not know that. And then Marty called one night and asked if I'd move to Dallas. We had a gig in about 10 days. I had to learn 24 songs, and in 2 days...
Are you kidding?
I moved to Dallas.
Wow.
Lived with headphones on and had a big art pad with just key words that would just jog my memory in in case of a forgetful moment. And I loved it. You know, at that stage, I, of course, knew who they were, and they heard me sing from a tape my dad had given them, and he wasn't giving it to them to pitch me to them. My dad's just proud like that, and he gave them my Berklee School of Music audition tape, and that's how they heard about me.
So, Natalie, what was it like for you knowing that your father was already, you know, a member or at least a semi-regular in the band? Was that an inhibiting or a comforting idea? Was it awkward for you to play with him?
No, I love playing with my dad, but I wouldn't even call... he wasn't really even a member of the band.
Just on the records?
The records, and then just really a sparse gig here and there. Mm-hmm. No, I would love it. I would be so proud. And I remember... when we played with Buck Owens, and that's another strange thing. Even though my dad's a musician, we didn't talk a lot about music. I sort of learned about my dad's musical taste and history from reading interviews he had done or listening to other people ask him questions. But I had learned that that he and his brothers knew every single Buck Owens tune, and that's what he played in clubs. Those were the first songs that he learned, and we played Buck Owens Club, and my dad played with us, and I just remember being really proud that, you know, my dad probably, you know, in his wildest dreams never thought he would be on stage with his daughter and Buck Owens, and you could just see it. And the same thing with James Taylor. My family, that was the one music we could agree on in the car trip on the way to Colorado or whatever our summer vacation was. And when I got to play with James Taylor and my dad, it was surreal. It was unbelievable. And my dad is not a crier. He's a very man's man. And his eyes were watering.
Marty and Emily, your sisters, and the song "So Hard" is about how you've both had infertility treatments, and you both have twins now. So, do you attribute the twinness to the infertility treatments?
We knew that there was a chance. I think in my case, there's a 30% chance I would have twins. Yeah, and Emily and I tried for many years to get pregnant, and that was what we ended up having to do, and it was an emotional process, and it's something that we do talk about because it's strange. I mean, among our friends and family, it seems about 50-50, people having to find some alternative help way to help them conceive. And I think growing up, you just think it's a given.
So what's it like now when you're on the road and there's seven children between the three of you? Do they all travel with you? Do you have a daycare center?
They do all travel with us, but we haven't been on the road with them yet.
And during the hiatus when you weren't recording, did you all see each other a lot? Do you live near each other?
It's funny. Natalie's forced to spend a lot of time with me.
Yeah, it's painful.
Because I married her sister's husband's brother. So we met at Natalie's sister Kim's wedding and quickly fell in love. And now...
Me and you?
Yeah. and, you know, now we share a lot of the same family. And we get together at Christmas and different holidays. And, I mean, we're all friends anyway. And, of course, Emily's my sister. So we're always going to each other's kids' birthdays when we can. And... yeah, I'd say our lives are pretty intertwined.
Well, there's another song I want to play from your new CD, and this is called Everybody Knows. It's a song that you co-wrote with Gary Louris of the Jayhawks. Tell us the story behind this song, and does this song have an autobiographical element to it?
When we were writing it, we thought we were writing it about other people. But when it was finished and you go back and listen, you realize that you were able to tap into some of the emotions and some of the things that we said because they were autobiographical. It was more autobiographical than we thought it was.
To me, the chorus is more autobiographical than maybe the verses.
this "Swore You Never See Me Cry, You'd Never See Me Cry" makes me think kind of about you, Natalie. Just
that, I cry all the time.
But you're the last one to have wanted to really open up your life. You're a very private person, and then all of a sudden people are just wanting to know everything about you. I think that was a hard transition for you. So I don't know. That's what I think about with those lines.
Well, I want to thank you all for being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you
very much.
The Dixie Chicks' latest CD is called Taking the Long Way. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.